Okay, we finally got the recording started. So I just wanted to welcome everyone to this ethics call today. Today's date is October 5th, and it's 2016. Can you believe it? So for those of you who do not know me, my name is Tina Elliott, and I'm a PCC and DCC credential coach, a long time, I'm going to say past member of the ICF Ethics and Standards Committee, as well as the Independent Review Board, which is the Ethics Complaint Board. And yes, I just recently resigned after 13 years. Also, I'm a mentor coach and an executive coach, and many of you know me on faculty at Institute for Life Coach Training. But the reason I'm here today with all of you on this call is because I really am passionate about ethics and supporting coaches to operate in the highest degree ethically. So before we get started, I want to just remind everyone and let them know we are recording today. And we are recording because this recording will be going out around the globe. So for those that could not be here today, I'd like to just let you know that it is recording. If you have any concerns about confidentiality for yourself, I'd like to say you may protect that any way you feel is important. Okay. Also want to welcome all of those coming in right now, so welcome. Also want to welcome ILCT students, because ILCT is my partner in this program, and also we have Jim Vaculo here, who's another faculty member. I don't know if we have any other faculty here. So thanks to all of you. Also, this went out to Turnkey Solution coaches. So if any of you executive coaches from Turnkey are here, we're happy to have you. So I'd like to keep the lines open if we possibly can. If you have things going on in your area, you can actually do a star 6 to mute yourself and then star 6 to unmute or use your own mute. So try to keep the line quiet, but I hate the idea of actually muting everyone because I don't like just listening to myself talk. I'd rather engage with all of you. So, all right, so we're going to go ahead and jump in. We're going to be talking about the power of a solid coaching agreement today. I think what I want to share about that with my past experience on the ICF Ethics Board. This is one area that if coaches had a solid coaching agreement and not only had a solid agreement, but it was well documented and also followed, that there are approximately 40% of the complaints that we receive or a little bit more are because of not having a solid agreement and adhering to that agreement. So how about that? That is the power of having a very solid coaching agreement. So we're going to jump in. I do have some questions here that were submitted from some individuals that actually signed up for the call through ILCT, and I will do my best to answer those. And also, I will check in as I can and have time to see if there's questions, burning questions coming up for any of you. So is there any question before we jump in? Anybody have a question? Comment? Okay, we're going to jump in then. So my intention today is to either support you in fine-tuning your awareness about the power of an effective coaching agreement, but there's actually these different components to the agreements that are important. And I have to say over the years I've seen some pretty sad agreements. There's something that happened many, many years ago when this industry started, and I guess people didn't think we were running a real business and had to have coverage or had to have, like, a business agreement. We are doing business. So I think it's important to know that it's important that you do have coverage and that you do have important aspects of an agreement or a contract. We can call it whatever you like. I know in coaching we call it a coaching agreement. But we're going to go over some of those components today. I'm going to go high level. Obviously, we only have an hour here today. So because of that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep it high level. So I'm going to be talking about the various aspects at a high level. I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty. So you're welcome to take notes or listen to the recording. If you want to fill in any blanks, I will probably be going a little quickly so that we can get through the important aspects. Also want to let you know that if you decide this is of interest to you to actually have an agreement like that, I'm going to be talking a little bit about my workshop down the road as we get into this call and That is actually, this sample agreement, which is a 7-page agreement, is part of that workshop. So you do get that if you go to the ethics workshop. So let's go ahead and jump in and start talking about coaching agreements. So, you know, one of the questions that actually was asked and came through Institute for Life Coach Training is, what is the most important thing to include in a coaching contract with individuals, and what is the most important thing to include in a coaching contract with a group or organization? So our focus today is going to be more on the important aspects of working one-on-one with individuals. I think there's some other aspects to things with groups that you need to consider and be important, not to say that what we're going to be talking about today is not important. In a group agreement, it is. However, there's some different aspects you would need to have in working with a group. And as it relates to organization, I'd like to say, yeah, you really need to work with an attorney on an organizational contract or an agreement in working with doing like corporate organization type coaching. Really important to have a good solid agreement. But we are going to talk about more so the individual type of agreements today. Okay? One of the other questions that was asked as well through Institute for Life Coach Training was, what's the best place to find templates for coaching agreements? And should agreement boilerplates be reviewed by attorneys? So first thing I want to say is talk about some of the different avenues that we get coaching agreements. For example, if you're an ILCT student, there are agreements, sample agreements, that they have provided for you in the library. Many of us who work with a mentor coach, I know that's where I started like 17 years ago, is I kind of got a template from my coach. So I say a template, something that she used, something that I started with, but mine has expanded dramatically from that point. So those are some ways. There's also a couple out on the ICF website. Can't say I personally recommend them. I think there's some holes. but they are templates, something you can certainly start with. And then, like I said a while ago, if you're interested in the agreement that I use or that I have that covers all the ethical bases, we'll be talking about that later. So there are options to getting boilerplates and to getting, I think actually you can Google too. There's some coaches that actually put their sample agreement out there. So there's lots of avenues to find agreements. Any questions so far? Okay. So we're going to start going through the important aspects of a coaching agreement, things that I'm going to be talking about here today. I'm going to say some of them are no-brainers. So some of these are pretty much a given. You're probably going to say, yeah, no kidding, I have that in my agreement. That's fantastic. I think some of the things I'm going to be talking about here today, though, are maybe you don't have them in your agreement, and maybe there are things that you need to fill in a little bit of your agreement. I will say the agreement that I'm going through today is a compilation of years and years of working on the ethics board. So all the points that I have seen come up through that and complaints and things that you need to have covered in your agreement are in this agreement that I'm going through today. Okay. However, I won't be getting into the details, just strictly due to time. So let's go ahead and jump in. Like I said, this is more of an individual type coaching agreement. So naturally, you're going to have a date on your agreement about when it was signed, who it's with, who the client is, what their address is, that type of basic information. Also, this is another important area that if you have an agreement and you're actually working with a sponsor. So not only the client, but also the sponsor. So that could be a parent, it could be a company, it could be an uncle, an aunt, whoever is paying for the coaching. So if that is the case, it's important that you have information in your agreement about your sponsor and also about who they are. And then also there's some important aspects that you'll need to cover regarding confidentiality, and we'll talk a little bit about some of those as we go through this. So important to note that. I want to say that this area of confidentiality and sponsors is a really sticky area where lots of coaches have gotten in hot water. So confidentiality is really, really important. Okay? So definition of coaching. Good idea to really have a definition of coaching so it's documented, it's clear. about what you are providing as a coach. Okay? Also, if you're credentialed, letting them know your credentials, et cetera. Letting them know if you operate according to a code of ethics, as in the ICF or BCC code of ethics or other credentials. Okay? And again, then services. So what you're agreeing to as the services. So how you're meeting. Are you meeting virtually? Are you meeting face-to-face, in person, individual, that type of thing. So how you're meeting. And then another part of it is getting more specific about the coaching meetings. So the client's going to call you if you're calling the client, if you're meeting on Skype, noting your client's first scheduled meeting. So basically the start of the coaching engagement, how many meetings you're having a month, and how minutes, how long they are in duration. All of this is really important to document in your agreement so it's crystal clear between the two of you. Okay? Any questions so far? Okay. There are some other things that I do put some detail in this area where, of course, I let, you know, clients know it's best if they can make their coaching a priority and keep their standing appointments, letting them know that if they're late, they're going to miss out on valuable coaching time, so it's really best if they can, you know, do their best to be there on time. However, life happens sometimes, and we know that doesn't work out. Okay? Coaching time and support, that's another topic that we look at here. So obviously you're providing support when you meet with your client. But what other support do you provide as part of this agreement or monthly package that you're providing to the client? So you might want to have a comment in there that you formally meet so many times a month. However, that you're available at other times for them if that's part of your package. Okay, the client can email in between, or the client can actually call, that type of thing, 5-10 minutes. I learned a lesson quite a few years back on this one. I had to make a note in my agreement that they are welcome to email or to call for specific things, meaning if they want to share a win or have a specific challenge. And the reason I had to do that is I had a client read this and assume that I would be emailing, she could email, and I was to email her on a daily basis. So I had to make a point of being crystal clear of what the support is all about. And I have to say overall, I don't know about everybody else, most of my clients are really good. They don't really overutilize my time. But I had one that really thought that's what she was getting. So, again, I had to be crystal clear on what was being provided. Okay? Questions or comments on this? Okay. Another piece of this, too, is what is the expectation for return calls? So if someone calls, they get your voicemail, when will you be returning that call? What is your guideline on that? 24, 48 hours, during business hours, et cetera. Now, be clear and when you set the expectations of when you will get back to them. Okay? And then also if the coach is available for extra time and what that cost would be or how that would work. That's important to document as well. Okay, we're going to talk about a few other things here. We'll call this coaching procedures. Meeting preparation. Many of us use prep forms with our clients. It helps support the client's progress and their ownership of the process. We know some clients don't like to use them. However, I put that in the agreement. I request 24 hours in advance, if possible, to get their preparation form in. Gives me an opportunity to look at it before my day starts. Also, the service fee. You know, what is the fee that you're charging for this monthly package, or however your package is laid out, or however your services are provided, be it hourly, be it package, etc. Here's another important point that some agreements do not cover. But it's something I've learned, again, through the working on the IRB. If a client chooses to take a leave of absence or discontinue coaching, here's my question to all of you. What do you do? Does the agreement terminate? Or do they just get to come and go on that same agreement as they like? Well, I have learned it's best when someone terminates their coaching to terminate the agreement. So it's crystal clear when they started, crystal clear when they left. And here's the other thing. You know, this agreement, these agreements are living, breathing documents. And because they are living, breathing documents, it's important that you keep up with ethics, with legal, with all kinds of things, update your agreement. So if you have a client who comes and goes over a two-year time frame, and let's say you've learned a lot and changed your agreement, it's important to think about that and say, well, you know, maybe each time they come back for coaching, they should be signing a new agreement. Again, that's a personal choice for you, but it is something that I have learned through the IRB, how important that would be. Okay. Also mentioning, too, here, let them know about invoicing and payment and when it's due and if there's late fees and where to pay, how to pay, options to pay, all of that. And then I ask the client, as also part of this, is to, you know, to sign the agreement, keep a copy for themselves. This is a big question we get into. I'm going to talk about this next, about signing agreements. I get a lot of this now. Well, can't they just email it back to me? Say, I have it, I've read it. Well, I guess that's an option, but does that really protect you in an ethics complaint? Maybe not. They could come in and say, well, I didn't sign that. My John Hancock's not on that. Okay? And I know that's a lot of hassle for a lot of business owners. And there's business owners now using the electronic signature process. We've got some noise. If you're making noise, could you please put yourself on mute? Star 6, I'd appreciate it. So, again, you know, think about that. You have somebody signing your agreement, and you get into an ethics complaint, and it's right there. They're John Hancock. It's pretty hard to deny. Electronic systems, electronic contracts, yes. I was just recently reading an article about that, and they say that people, they did research, and they say that people really don't take them that seriously when they just check a box or do an electronic signature. But when they have to sit down and they read it and they actually have to sign it, that they really do take more notice. So I highly recommend that, even though it may not be the most effective and efficient and easy, that you really think about how you want to be doing that in your business. And I do recommend that you get a signature. Much more powerful if you get into an ethics complaint. Any questions or comments on this today?
Yes.
Who is this?
This is Ann.
Hi, Ann.
I didn't hear you mention anything about you know, like they miss a session. Trying to think, I've lost the word in terms of what you call that, but you know, they don't come to a session and you charge, you know, do you have a policy in there that says you charge them if they miss a session or they don't give you 24 hours notice?
Well, you are just all over this. I haven't even gotten there yet.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I'll wait.
That's okay. I'm on page 4 out of 7 pages right now.
Oh, okay. So. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, this is just the way that my agreement is laid out, where I really have the first few pages are really specific to the actual coaching agreement. And now we're going to jump into some sections and areas that I think many of you have signed business agreements before in the past, and there's always typically there's a terms and conditions
okay.
section. Okay, and that's where we're going next, okay? And that's where that will be listed. So
what do you call this first part?
It's actually all part of the agreement, but this is all about the services that are being provided and the coaching procedures.
Okay.
And then you'll start to see as we go through terms and conditions. These are some of the important aspects that are really important for your client to know ethically and then also legally. Okay, so this is what we're going to be jumping into here. All right? So stay with me.
Definitely.
Okay, good deal. Okay, so terms and conditions. Again, this is something where I actually list at the top of the terms and conditions pages who the client is and who the coach is, and that they agree to the services rendered as well as agree to the terms and conditions. Also, that the client acknowledges and had read and understands the agreement. So these are some of the important aspects. Like I said, I'm not going to go into a ton of detail, go into a little bit, but really want to just basically cover the topic so it's clear about what these terms and conditions are. So obviously confidentiality, that's so important to really cover confidentiality and what that looks like and what that means and how you hold confidentiality as a coach and when you release confidentiality. because as you know, there's certain reasons, certain aspects, certain things that could come up. And I think the ICF, again, just updated their code, I think. I was part of the team that did it. But last June, updated the code to include aspects that need to be reported. So, for example, many of you are aware of mandated reporting. So reporting abuse, reporting criminal activities, these types of things. If your client comes up and talks about that, you need to let them know that those are the types of things that will be released to the appropriate authorities. Okay? So really important to not only have this in agreement, have it signed, but it's also a conversation when you start with your clients. You should make sure that they're crystal clear on how all of this works. All right? Also important, in confidentiality, if you are working with a sponsor, so someone else is paying for the coaching, these types of things, you need to have a clause in there regarding the sponsor and how communication works to the sponsor, what kind of conversations are had. And typically, we don't really have conversations with the sponsor regarding the client. It's best, not to say that you can't all meet together and have conversations, but it's typically best to facilitate a meeting and allow the client to talk to the sponsor. That's always best. Okay? But it's important that you have a clause in here that the client understands that all coaching conversations between the coach and client are confidential and cannot be disclosed. Certainly the content of the conversation. But what's really important is when someone else is paying for coaching, that everyone is crystal clear on what the communication is going to be about the agreement, about progress, etc., and have that in writing so everyone understands. Okay, because this is also another area, like I mentioned earlier, big area for ethical complaints. Questions or comments on this?
Tina, this is Denise. Can you give an example of one of those that you've seen with that?
Okay, I can't talk specifically about complaints, but I can give you some general information. This happens actually quite frequently. An example could be that, let's say you're an executive coach and you're working in a company and you have stakeholders involved in that agreement. So you might have HR representatives, you might have their supervisor, their manager, that type of thing. And let's say that HR manager sees you coming in to meet with the client and they'll go, oh, by the way, just want to check and see how things are going. How's things going with so-and-so? So the coachee.
Okay.
And the coach gets kind of caught off guard. Oh, great, blah, 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 and starts blabbering about the coaching. Yeah, that's how people get in trouble. They just get caught off guard. So it's really important that when anybody starts asking about the coaching, you really put your radar up and be clear about what you release and what you don't. And by the way, I just want to say it's typically very common in executive coaching agreements that there is specific types of information that is reported and allowed to stakeholders. I mean, the company is typically paying large sums of money to have you be coaching their employees. So it's important, for example, progress, benchmarking, how they're doing on the goals that were defined for the agreement, that type of thing. But that all has to be done in writing prior. Okay, is that helpful?
Yes, that does help, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Here's another example, a sponsor. You have an uncle who's paying for his niece to have some coaching because she's really challenged in getting a job and figuring out what she wants to do with her work and her life. So this lovely uncle decides, I'm going to pay for a coach. Okay, well, that's all well and good, and that's so lovely. But as you know, as a coach, it's really important that we have the conversations with all parties to understand what's being delivered, understands how the communication works between the client and the sponsor, and the coach has to have her radar on all the time, okay, about what is being released and when, which is why it's always best as coaches that we facilitate conversations between the sponsor and the client. I like to say that's always the safest approach. Any questions on that?
That's helpful for me. This is Denise again. Last spring I had a father call me who wanted to hire me to work with his young daughter and told me all about what was going on with her
And then he was going to approach her on the coaching, and he thought it was a great thing. She was job hunting, and she decided to not go for coaching. But I was concerned at that point about, well, you know, with him paying, how does that work? So it helps to hear this.
Good. That's the intent, so that you understand how to lay that out and to protect yourself.
Yeah.
Because this is a big area of ethical complaint. Okay, and it's just because we're not thinking. You know, we're coaches, we love to help and support, and sometimes we're just not thinking. So it's really important to think that out and have that agreement in writing beforehand. So good point.
So when you do this, are you sitting down with both the client and the person paying then and going over this together,
well,
I imagine?
Well, that's certainly one way. You can actually have conversations with both and say that you're going to document it in the agreement, and I'll need signatures from both of you on the agreement so you understand.
Okay.
So there's various ways to do that. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Tina. This is Christina. I have a question.
Sure.
It's regarding the sponsor, and I'm just wondering if it's a child under the age of 18, like, say, you know, a student that's 17 turning 18 and, you know, looking to apply to colleges or something like that. How does that work ethically and sponsorship, and what kind of confidentiality they have legally?
Oh, minors, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that brings a whole other aspect to things, because you're going to have to really be crystal clear with the client and with the sponsor about expectations about what is reported to the sponsor. For example, if you have a minor and they're doing drugs or they're drinking or they're doing God knows what, you're going to have to be very specific in documenting what you will report to the sponsor.
Okay, thank you.
Something to think about. That's a really, yeah, something to really think about when you're working with minors or underage individuals about letting them know up front, if you tell me this is what you're doing, you need to understand I have to report that to your parent or whoever, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Good question. Okay, so again, being very crystal clear in your agreement about when you will release information, when you will, for example, criminal activity. You know, it's a little nebulous. I was in a call with another faculty member and talking about, well, what kind of criminal activity? You know, is this about, you know, somebody smoking pot, or is this about, you know, criminal activity? Is it embezzlement? You know, I think it's important for you to sit back and really look at, you know, criminal activity, and it really is a moral and personal call about how you look at that and what needs to be reported. I think more about big criminal activity, important things that are doing damage to others or that type of thing. I think you're going to have to make your own judgment call on that, okay? And, of course, then the part of danger to self or others, or has knowledge of dangerous situations that could hurt somebody. So coaches are required to report that. I urge coaches to check in. You know, you typically have state-mandated reporting laws. Some states, everybody has to report, regardless of who you are. For example, I'm in California. I don't have to report yet. I'm not listed as a profession that has to report under the Penal Code, which is the code that oversees mandated reporting. But it's coming, I'm sure. But there are states, it doesn't matter who you are, that you are considered a mandated reporter. Okay? Okay, that's a big section, so I want to take some time and make sure, like I said, I didn't get into all the detailed information on that, but that's a very important topic, not only to have in your agreement and have signatures and be clear, but also to have a conversation with your client just as you start your coaching engagement. Okay? Okay, another note I have in here, too, is payment arrangements, so contract price, how it's payable. Also, again, getting more into, I mentioned earlier, late fees, those types of things. This is actually documented here at what percentage of late fee and when that late fee will happen, if that's something you're doing in your practice. Clarify exactly, again, where payments are to be sent and how. Another section here is no guarantees or warranties. So, again, there's a whole section here about, you know, how can we don't guarantee and we don't provide warranties as coaches, because we can't promise results. That's right. That's basically in the ethics code, even though it's languaged a little differently. But we cannot promise results. So it's important that we're clear that there are no guarantees or warranties. okay? And we're going to talk about limits of liabilities. There is a little bit of information here, too, about the limit of liability and the liability being the agreement price in the contract. And, of course, there's a lot more language around this. Okay,
Tina.
So it's important to note that. All right?
Tina, can you hear me?
Yes. Who's this?
It's Sonia from the London London, UK.
Oh, it's Sonia from London.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Tina, when I see marketing from, say, Marshall Goldsmith, and he talks about programs where only pay me on my results,
mm-hmm.
it worries me because he's putting up some sort of confidence around results and that he's the one helping deliver that with the program now. We're not in a position to offer things like that.
Well, I can't tell you what not to do, but I can tell you what's ethically, what you need to do ethically according to the ICF ethics code.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not promising results.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, you know, in terms of your experience with coaches and marketing, have you come across that where they're marketing results?
All the time. All the time.
Okay.
Yeah, because coaches don't know better. In fact, their piece of code at the ICF, I really wish they'd make it more clear, so it basically says, you know, promising results is unethical. But it doesn't actually say that. I actually, in my workshop, I have a lot of individuals that go through my ethics workshop, and they really sharpen their awareness. And they'll send me emails all the time. They go, oh, my God, look at this coach's website and what they're promising. You know, it's a really dangerous area. It can come back to bite you ethically if you're making promises. Actually, I'm going to be talking about some of that on another call tomorrow with the ICF LA chapter, going through a dilemma where a coach made promises and what happened. So if you guys want to join me there, you can join me there too, ICF LA, and you can sign up for the free call tomorrow. But I'll be talking more about that there, Sonia. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Tina?
Good question. Yes.
This is Jim. Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I always tell prospective clients that the coaching process works if you do the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I put the onus on them. I can't promise results simply because I don't know if you're going to follow through or not. But to
Absolutely.
The extent that you do, you will get results.
Mm-hmm. That's an important conversation, Jim, absolutely, to have with your clients. The results are based on your work. Okay? I do tell my clients the same thing. They need to understand that. As we know in coaches that have been around a while, the client always does the work, right?
Right.
We're there to support, we're there to partner, we're there to support them in their progress, but they actually do the work. And if they choose not to do the work or something goes wrong with them doing the work or having problems, another area to be aware of is make sure, you know, that you are bringing it up when your client is not making progress and having those conversations, and that's what we'll talk about tomorrow. So thank you, Jim. Really important.
This is Sharon. I've got a clarification about that too, especially regarding Marshall Goldsmith, because to me, when he says only pay me on my results, that does not sound like a promise to me. That doesn't sound like I'm promising you're going to get results. That sounds to me like if you get results, then pay me based on that. And so I think, you know, a lot of clients out there, they are looking for results, and they want to be in a conversation about results. And I think that there's got to be a distinction between promising results and discussing results.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are ethical ways to do that. Ethical ways to do that are sharing other results from clients, but it's based on their work. So you can say, here are some results some of my other clients have received, but they did the work. So there's
mm-hmm.
nothing wrong with sharing things like that. It's when you promise somebody specifically results that gets you in hot water, okay?
Right. Totally.
Yeah, good point. Okay, I'm going to move on because we've still got a lot to cover here today. So here's another piece, no third-party reliance. So may not be furnished to quoted or relied upon or used by any other person or entity, government, agency, or purpose. So, again, this is information that's furnished to the client by the coach, knowing this is specifically for the coaching engagement, and they may not be sharing your documentation with others, okay? Again, we do no medical, psychological, or psychiatric advice, so important we really drive that home, and of course have a paragraph about that, including also the aspect, the distinction of coaching versus therapy. So they are crystal clear on what you are providing as a coach and what you are not providing, that you're not doing therapy, okay? And that we're clear on the difference, so important. Do you have a refund policy? If you do, it's important to have it documented. Suggest you have it documented if you don't have a refund policy. I do want to share a little important aspect around this too, and this is how coaches, I've seen some coaches that could have probably gotten out of an ethical agreement if they just would have refunded some money. Like if somebody wasn't happy and they came back and they said, you know what, I want you to refund my last month of coaching. You know, whether you agree with it or not, a lot of coaches say, I provided service, I'm not refunding. And what I always tell coaches is think about what you're going to go through 6, 7, 8 months maybe in an ethical complaint and all the stress associated with that and what goes on. I'd say you might want to think about that. So that's something I urge you to all think about, okay? All right. Here's this piece, rescheduling policy. So make sure that you have a rescheduling policy. I know common ones are 24 hours in advance, notifying the coach, of course, unless there's a medical emergency or some type of emergency with the client. This is another thing I want to bring up is a lot of coaches create these policies and they don't stick to them. And here's the sticky part about that. We always want to be kind and generous and supportive of our clients, but this can come back to bite you. Because if you've laid out policies and you don't follow them, why should your client follow them? That comes back to bite you in an ethics complaint. Okay. All right, communication. Sorry?
I learned that the hard way.
is this Wendy?
Yeah.
Wendy, welcome. Good to hear your voice. Yeah, you're right. It's really important, you know, rescheduling. If you don't stick to your own policies, it does come back to bite you. But I know some of us want to be generous. And, you know, what I want to say again about ethics complaints, it's not that coaches are trying to be unethical. They're just not thinking. Or sometimes they're just really wanting to help and be kind. And those coaches who want to help and be kind, it does come back to bite them sometimes. So I urge you to think about when you're over-helping or being kind because it can come back to bite you, okay? All right, we're going to go through a few more here. Communication. I think it's important to really document your communication and expectations around communication. I mean, that's what we do as coaches is we communicate. How important the communication process is between you and the client. And, you know, if something upsets the client, you know, how will you as the coach make that right? And I let my clients know, if something upsets you, please tell me. It's so important because I will work with you to make it right. I will make it right. So many times, if it's conflict, we all work with conflict resolution processes, those types of things. Maybe we just have to put on that hat for a minute and listen to our client and see what the problem is and figure out what we need to do to fix whatever the problem is. Okay? So, again, having a paragraph about communication, the importance of it, the expectations with the coach, the expectations with the client. Okay. Use of coach training materials. So a client needs to understand that a coach doesn't accept a liability for a client's decision to use any part of coach training materials. This is specific particularly for mentor coaches, which I am, that type of thing. But to know that, you know, many times we share materials and things with our mentees and to know that there's no liability on my part if you choose to utilize my documentation. Okay. Release of information. I want to talk about that for a second. So, for example, if you are an ICF coach and you're going, they have three levels of credentials, and if you're going for your next level of credential or you're going to be utilizing those hours or you'd like to utilize the hours, from this engagement with the client, you will have to release their name, their email address, the dates of service, and the hours that you provided. But again, that is releasing information. So it's really important that you have this in your agreement, okay, and that you document that. I actually have my clients actually initial that section so they are crystal clear that I will release this for the next level of my credential, okay? All right, really, really important piece here is contract cancellation, termination, and liability. So deciding what is your contract, what is the agreement, You know, are you doing it for a certain amount of months? Is it monthly for a certain amount of months? Or is it free-flowing? Is there, they can come as many times as they want or as little as they want? I don't know about you. I don't like to do the agreements where someone thinks they're going to come for a month of coaching and get it all figured out. I let my clients know that I have a minimum of 3 months, but they can cancel at any time with a two-week notice. I do recommend a minimum six-month commitment, but then again, that's open to them depending on, you know, how quickly they do their work and what they want to accomplish. But it's important that you have this information there, that you do have cancellation and termination and how termination works. You know, we always think of our clients terminating service, but what if you need to terminate the service? You know, you as a coach always need to have the opportunity, if this isn't the right engagement or something's not right with it, that you are able to terminate that. Okay? All right, so let's see. We've got one more page to go through here. What I'd like to do before we get in, I'm going to get into what I call the legal mumbo jumbo. I am not an attorney, so I'm not going to go into super depth, but I am going to talk about, this is so much information that I see missing from agreements because coaches are not looking at this as an actual business contract or agreement and covering themselves legally. So I am going to talk a little bit about some of these components and things for you to think about. That's why one of the questions here was, is it important to have things reviewed by an attorney? I say absolutely, particularly an attorney local that understands business and understands laws, et cetera, very important. Not to say that you can't get a nice boilerplate from someone and say, this is what I have for a boilerplate, can you take a quick look? And usually they won't charge you a lot. But it is important that you have legal review and cover yourself. This is a business, and that does mean that you're liable as a business owner. Okay? Tell you what, before I go there, though, I'm just going to tell you guys a little bit about the upcoming workshop. So just take a second here, talk about it. Again, this agreement that I'm going through here today, this entire agreement is a template and is available. Okay. As part of this workshop that's coming up. It's coming up October 19th. It will include, actually we'll go over some really juicy, I like to say, juicy ethical dilemmas. We're also going to give you 20 tips, so learning from other coaches about how to stay out of ethical hot water so you don't end up where they are with a complaint. Also, it's a four-week workshop, and actually you can get BCC and ICF CCEs. And note, these are ethics specific, which you must have now for the ICF to renew, and also must have for the BCC credential, so it meets both needs. Okay? So you're welcome to go to my website, synergycoaching.org, go to workshops and check it out, or also I'll be sending an email after the call with the recording, and there will be information there. But I want to let you know this agreement I'm going through today is part of that workshop. So yeah. Now, let me just, yes.
What's BCC?
Sorry?
What is BCC?
Board Certified Sorry. Coach.
Oh, that's a different or a certifying organization than the ICF?
It is the Center for Credentialing. It is a newer credential that's been out now for, 5 years maybe?
Oh.
Board Certified Coach.
Okay, and what's the number of hours required? Do you know?
For which one?
For the ICF.
For the ICF, you have to have 3 ethics specific.
Okay.
You will get 9 ethics specific from this course. And just because they're ethics specific, it does also, because it's core competency, it does calculate you can use all 9 towards your 50, what is it, 50 I think, or 30, I don't remember, that you have to have for renewal. Okay?
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Okay, so let's talk about some of the legal aspects. So again, not an attorney, but I want to talk about just from a business perspective of some of the things that you need to think about having in your agreement. So for example, limits of liability. It's really important to have a limit of liability. What is your liability in this engagement with your client? Okay, so to have limits of liability. Also, how will this be handled if something legal comes up, if your client wants to sue you or wants to get involved legally because of one issue or another? Something I do want to share before I get into this, by the way, we have learned over the years that if you operate at a highly ethical place, that it does help protect you from legal issues. Not to say always every time, but overall when you operate highly ethically, it will protect you more from legal problems. We have seen that over and over. Okay. So again, you know, mediation, arbitration, what is your process? That's why it's important to have this kind of thing and know that, you know, wanting your party to agree to this. I think you walk into any medical office today, you have to sign an agreement about mediation and arbitration, you know, to forego actual lawsuits and those types of things. Okay? So important to have that, important to list, you know, the county and the state of where you live and how you operate under what laws. Specifically, I'm talking for the U.S. I know we have others from around the world, and also will be listening to this recording, so it's important that you document your locale and what laws and jurisdictions you operate under. Okay? Another section is commencement of action. So any claim, demand, or right or defense by any party arises out of this agreement. How will this work? What kind of negotiations will go on? How long? How far out? You have a client that worked with you 5 years ago. Can they come back after 5 years and try to sue you or try to cause issues, that type of thing? So you want to have a limit, 6 months from date, something to that effect to make sure that there is a limit to that. Okay? Just like ICF, when it comes to ethical complaints, we don't, you know, it has to happen within the year of termination of service. So people can't just come back, you know, 2, 3, 4 years later and file an ethics complaint, okay? So governing law. So, again, this agreement will be governed by and construed in accordance with laws of your state or your wherever, whatever laws mandate or operate, you're operating under, so jurisdiction. And then sometimes there's also a miscellaneous section here that I have as part of mine, actually, and, again, this was done by an attorney, so just noting that this agreement represents the entire agreement to the parties and additional information, making sure that they're crystal clear that all of these aspects that we've reviewed here today are part of the agreement, okay? And also to make sure that this agreement will be binding in your of the benefit of heirs, executors, administrators, successors, and assignments, et cetera. And then also that a fax copy of this agreement may be used as the original, those types of things. So there's lots of little aspects here in this miscellaneous piece. Phew. So, like I said, this is high level and brief. What questions or comments are coming up for anyone?
This is Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
Hi. You had mentioned that it's important to put the, you know, the county and state where you live and operate under, you know, what laws and jurisdictions you're operating under. Is there any other comments that come to mind if we're doing, you know, phone coaching and working with people in a lot of different states? Is there anything else to keep in mind, or you just kind of have to really look at where you live and follow those?
Yeah. Like I said, you always want to run things by an attorney, but typically what I understand from this is you are mandated, which is why you have it in this agreement. You are mandated by where you live, where you reside, where your business is, okay? So where you run your business from, those are the laws that you abide by, okay? And, yeah, it's a great question because we do work all over the world. I do. I work with clients in all different countries and that type of thing. So great question, but I think it's really important, again, around legal things, any questions that you have is to really run it by an attorney, okay?
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions today? Is anybody on overload? Like, was this way too much?
Tina, it's Sonia again.
Uh-huh.
Hello. Any contract that we need to think about if we're doing associate work with a company? Anything that we need to kind of make sure that we've clarified?
That's a really good question, Sonia, and it's very common. A lot of coaches do, like we say, contract or 1099 with other coaching companies. I do as well. And it's important that we understand, you know, typically we're not involved in the proposal or contract process as a coach working for a company, but to understand, you know, certain aspects, confidentiality, you know, those types of things, and understand what you're getting involved with. So I like to say to ask the questions, maybe get something, you know, from the company you're working with so that you're clear on what is being said to the company about what you're bringing in. Okay, so I think those are some really important questions to make sure you ask those questions and get answers and ideally get some documentation for yourself.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Last chance.
Tina, this is Lynn. I just wanted to say that was a great overview. But also, it's, you know, I think that the challenge for us as coaches is that we've got to find a balance with legal and with the client that's in front of us. I mean, we really can't scare them off because if you throw, you know, a 10-page document in front of them, their eyes glaze over. And so, you know, and it's finding, as I say, the balance or the way in which we say what we need to say without it looking like the attorney just put something in front of them.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And you know what? I want to say, Lynn, that was really important to me too. Even when I created my agreement and as built over time with all the ethical aspects, you know, the legal page is like less than one page. You know, it's probably 3/4 of a page. I have to honestly say I haven't had anybody walk away from it at this point. But I think you're right. You do have to find the balance. And I don't know. I guess I'd want to question if somebody, first off, if somebody has questions, it's important that you're able to answer the questions and what they mean and why these clauses in your agreement are there and are important. I have to be honest. It's a question to think about that if somebody wasn't willing because of an aspect of the agreement, that's something that would have to really be a conversation.
Well, and I think what I'm referring more to is the language. Because attorneys tend to use language that's a little bit, you know, I mean, it's not comfortable. And so it's really kind of bringing it down to the level where, you know, this is really what it means. It's the user's version of the contract, you know, as
and you
long
know what, there's
as, you
two,
know, it certainly protects you.
Good point. And there's two sides to that. We have to be careful that when our attorney is providing specific language, sometimes it needs to be that specific language. Other times you can change to more user-friendly. And that's something I did in creating mine and working with the attorney. As I said, you know, can we make some of this more user-friendly and easier to understand? And he said, yes, but these specific aspects, you cannot change the language.
Right.
Okay, so that's important to know, too, you know, that there are aspects you can change, but it's important to understand the parts that you cannot change that could really impact you legally, okay? Great point. All right, everyone. Well, I just want to say thanks to everybody for being here. It's been great for me to be able to share some of this. I hope it's got you thinking a little bit about your own agreement and things you need to either put in or add or think about. So. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you, Tina.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.